Welcome to the second hour's reading of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
DPS reports at least 42 crashes. Between midnight and noon Tuesday, there were 42 crashes in the Greater Permian Basin, according to the Texas Department of Public Safety. DPS is also warning motorists the water on the roadways is likely to freeze again overnight, and even freezing precipitation is possible. Travel on West Texas roadways is discouraged at this time due to icy road conditions. However, if you must travel, please allow plenty of time to reach your destination and practice safe winter driving habits, Sergeant Stephen Blanco wrote in a news release. As of 2 p.m. Tuesday, the Texas Department of Transportation was diverting eastbound Interstate 10 traffic at Van Horn due to a multiple vehicle crash at the I-10-I-20 split. DPS also reported a weather-related fatal accident took place shortly after noon Tuesday, roughly 4 miles south of La Mesa. According to a DPS news release, a 64-year-old man from Dumas was traveling south on US 87 at an unsafe speed when he lost control of his Chevy Tahoe, veered off the roadway, and rolled into a field. The man's passenger, Fausto Gaspar de Arcos, 60, of Rio Grande City, was pronounced dead at the scene. According to DPS, she was not wearing a seatbelt. The Dumas resident, who was wearing a seatbelt, was taken to University Medical Center in Lubbock in serious condition. Texas teacher sentenced to 20 years on child porn charges. An Alpine man was sentenced in federal court in Alpine last week to 20 years in prison and 15 years of supervised release for distributing child sexual abuse material, a Department of Justice press release detailed. According to court documents, 60-year-old Albert Douglas Ackley uploaded and shared 10 files containing child sexual abuse material over a mobile messaging app. The files were flagged by the app and sent to the Internet Crimes Against Children database for law enforcement investigation. Agents executed a search warrant at Ackley's residence, where they found multiple devices containing prepubescent child sexual abuse material. At the time of the investigation, Ackley had been teaching math to grades 7 through 12 at a local public school. Ackley was arrested March 15, 2022, and has remained in federal custody. He pleaded guilty on August 12, 2022, to one count of distribution of child pornography. We will continue to vigorously prosecute those who distribute or create an illegal market for child pornography as they violate the sanctity and innocence of our children, U.S. Attorney Jamie Esperanza of the Western District of Texas stated in the press release. We are grateful for our law enforcement partners and to the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children as they work together to protect our kids and hold those offenders accountable for the harm that they cause in society. This sentence shows that HSI special agents and are laser focused on doing our part to bring to justice those who victimize children, Special Agent in Charge Francisco B. Barola of the Homeland Security Investigations El Paso Division stated in the press release. HSI is most appreciative of the collaboration partnership with the Texas Department of Public Safety that is a force multiplier to combat the horrific crime of child exploitation. HSI and the Texas Department of Public Safety investigated the case. Assistant U.S. Attorney Matthew Ellis prosecuted the case. SRSU receives grant to upgrade distance learning tech. Alpine, a $2.7 million grant awarded from the Connecting Minorities Communities Pilot Program, an innovation of the National Telecommunications and Information Administration, will be used across all four Sul Ross State University campuses in Alpine, Del Rio, Eagle Pass, and Uvalde to improve distance communications. SRSU campuses rely on technology to educate distant learners, especially on Rio Grande College campuses. Most of the grant funds will go directly to upgrading existing equipment, including 16 distant learning classrooms, teaching labs, 12 smart classrooms, auditoriums, and conference rooms. On the Alpine campus, funds will upgrade networking capabilities in 5 classrooms used for distance education. In addition, laptops will be made available to students who demonstrate need and have no access to such equipment off campus. The NTIA grant will allow Sul Ross State University to accomplish 3 goals, all of which improve the availability and integrity of the technology resources most frequently utilized by our students, said Chief Information Officer Jacob Fuentes. First, significant networking and technology infrastructure improvements will be performed on our main campus. Then, distant education and learning technology across all campus locations will be upgraded. Finally, we will begin a pilot program to distribute laptops to students who demonstrate the need and otherwise lack access to technology when off campus. Collaboratively, members of our faculty and staff have worked together to prepare, submit, and now receive this grant. It is an exciting opportunity that will leverage technology resources to several of our students. The improvements will address the need to keep up with rapidly changing technology, providing enhanced connectivity for distant learning students. In addition, all SRSU campuses relying on technology to work with colleagues across its campuses, and the upgrades will boost efficiency and productivity. The work will take place over a 3-year period, and major projects will be tackled during summer months to limit classroom disruption. Falcons baseball, softball teams debut new coaching staffs, by Lee Scheid. A pair of new faces debut their teams when the UTPB baseball and softball teams take the field for the first time in 2023. Head baseball coach Gabe Grinder and head softball coach Samantha Mendez were hired last summer to take over the Falcons programs. They are familiar with each other, as both coached at Ottawa University, an NAIA school in Ottawa, Kansas, the past 4 seasons. Grinder was the head baseball coach, leading the Braves to 117 victories the past 4 seasons, including a 42-10 mark in 2022. Mendez was an assistant coach for a program that won back-to-back Kansas Collegiate Athletic Conferences crowns in 2021 and 2022, along with qualifying for the NAIA World Series in 2021. Both will try to replicate that success in the Permian Basin, as both programs have struggled in recent seasons. Grinder and the baseball team leap right into Lone Star Conference play with 4 games at St. Mary's beginning at 6 p.m. Friday in San Antonio. "We're excited to kick it off, playing a veteran team in St. Mary's," Grinder said during a Zoom call Monday. "We're going to find out where we are in a hurry. To be tested early is huge for us, our first round conference series. We are looking down the barrel of playing 4 playoff teams, with 3 of the 4 in the top 25 last year." Grinder added that the Falcons will rely on their defense and gap-to-gap power to compete. He is also looking to see how resilient his team is as it faces different situations through games and series. Mendez also is going to see her team tested right away, as the Falcons will compete, weather permitting, in the LSC-RMAC Challenge in Los Lunas, New Mexico. UTPB will face Fort Lewis at 11 a.m. Saturday, followed by a game against Colorado State Pueblo at 1 p.m. Sunday's doubleheader features New Mexico Highlands at 2 p.m. and then Adams State at 4 p.m. Mendez is looking forward to the challenge. "I think it's going really well," she said. "The players are playing for each other. These girls bring the energy every day. We always preach at competitive atmosphere. Energy and competitiveness are going to be a huge thing, just competing the whole entire time, to know that it's going to what it's going to take from the first pitch to the last pitch to win a ball game." The UTPB men's basketball team had a busy week, going 1-2 in Lone Star Conference play, with losses to Angelo State and Western New Mexico before finishing on a high note with a victory against Eastern New Mexico on Saturday at the Falcon Dome. Now the Falcons take to the road for games against West Texas A&M, 7:30 p.m. Thursday, and Lubbock Christian University, 3 p.m. Saturday. Head coach Kyle Tolan is hoping to use the victory against the Greyhounds as a springboard for the final weeks of the season in a playoff push. "We've got a group of guys that really care, trying every day, fighting every day," Tolan said. After Thursday's game, "I talked about the next 8 games, the guys over there that were going to fight with me. I think we have the chance to win every game, and that is what I tell the guys. We have to fight, compete, and find ways to win. Obituaries for Wednesday, February 1st. Goldsmith. Arthur William Wright, 92, of Goldsmith, passed away at home on Sunday, January 29th. He was born April 21st, 1930, in Odessa, to Schuler and Moselle White. He graduated from Odessa High School in 1947 and from Texas A&M University in 1951. He was preceded in death by his parents, his wife, his brother, and his cousin, Ed Early Riser. He is survived by his sister, Sarah Scaper, of Seattle, Washington, his son, Bill White, two daughters, Judy Jordan and husband, Don of Goldsmith, Susie White of Fort Worth, two grandchildren, Jason White and wife, Amanda, Jessica Washington and husband, Tyler, four great-grandchildren, Bailey White, Colton White, Arthur Braden Washington, and Rebecca Washington. There will be a visitation on Thursday, February 2nd from 6 to 8 p.m. at Hubbard Kelly Funeral Home. Funeral services will be held at 1 p.m. Friday, February 3rd at Odessa First Nazarene Church with Reverend Mark McCushion and Reverend Jeff Sedberry officiating. Interment will follow at Ector County Cemetery. Memorials may be made to Guadalupe Christian Camp, 56 Christian Camp Road, Carlsbad, New Mexico, 88220, or to your favorite charity. Virginia Longoria, Midland. Virginia Longoria, 80, of Odessa, passed away on Friday, January 27. Virginia was born in Brownsville, Texas, on May 23, 1942, to the late Saturino and Marcella Berentes. She married Otemio Longoria Sr. on January 4, 1959. Virginia is survived by her son Otemio Longoria Jr., Odessa, Texas, daughters Mary Woodruff, spouse Thomas Woodruff, Midland, and Virginia L. Hernandez, spouse Stephen Hernandez in Burney, Texas, 12 grandchildren, several great-grandchildren, and great-great-grandchildren. Virginia is preceded in death by her spouse, Otemio Longoria Sr., daughters Linda Longoria and Gloria Armendariz, brother and David Berrientes Sr. The family would like to thank Star Hospice and the staff for the great care they provided. A visitation will be held on Thursday, February 2nd, from 9 a.m. to 9 p.m. at Odessa Funeral Home, with a rosary being recited at 7 p.m. A funeral service will be held on Friday, February 3rd, at 10 a.m. in the Chapel of Odessa Funeral Home. Burial will follow at Ector County Cemetery. Serving as pallbearers will be Ricky Alvarez, Jaron Pearson, Rocky Longoria, Nicholas Longoria, Oscar Chendez, and Roy Lopez. Fond memories and expressions of sympathy may be shared at www.odessafuneralhome.com for the Longoria family. Death notices. Frank Reyes Pancho Rodriguez. Odessa. Frank Reyes Pancho Rodriguez, 79, of Odessa, died Friday, January 27th in Odessa. Funeral services is scheduled for 10 a.m. Saturday, February 4th at Acres West 24-Hour Chapel. Burial follows at Sunset Memorial Garden Cemetery. Father Joseph Ucker is officiating. Arrangements are by Acres West Funeral Chapel of Odessa. Harry Lynn Herring, Odessa, 72, died Thursday, January 26th in Odessa. Memorial service is scheduled for 1 p.m. Saturday, February 4th, at Acres West Funeral Chapel. Pastor Mike Bartlett is officiating. Arrangements are by Acres West Funeral Chapel of Odessa. Martha Caroline Eaton Hulsey, Odessa. Martha Caroline Eaton Hulsey, 87, of Odessa, died Saturday, January 21st, in Odessa. Graveside service is scheduled for 2 p.m. February 4th at Sunset Memorial Gardens. Arrangements are by the Sunset Memorial Gardens and Funeral Home of Odessa. Kayla Janice Jordan, 65, of Odessa, died Monday in Odessa. Graveside service is scheduled for 1 p.m. February 4th at Sunset Memorial Gardens. Pastor Clydell Chapman is officiating. Arrangements are by Sunset Memorial Gardens and Funeral Home. John Edmund Martin, 85, died Tuesday, January 24th in Odessa. Services are pending with Acres West Funeral Chapel. Shirley Martin Monahans, 72, died Tuesday, January 17th in Monahans. No service has been scheduled. Arrangements are by Acres West Funeral Chapel of Odessa. Ty Wesley Perrin, 32, died Saturday, January 28th in Odessa. Services are pending with Acres West Funeral Chapel of Odessa.
Hello, this is April reading the Midland Reporter Telegram for Saturday, January 28, 2023. Viewpoints. Conservancy still committed to great projects. Quality of Place Conservancy Board. As the Quality of Place Conservancy Board and supporting committees, we want to say thank you to the community of Midland for the support and encouragement you have shown for the Hogan Park project over the past several years. We also want to say a heartfelt thank you to the organizations and individuals who committed funds totaling more than $28.5 million toward the Hogan Park project. We have seen and continue to believe in the philanthropic, gracious spirit of Midlanders who are determined to do great things for our city. Understandably, we are saddened by the recent decision by four of the Midland City Council who voted down the Hogan Park project in partnership with the Conservancy. This vote marked the end of over 3 years of work and planning by many people, begun in 2019 with the Priority Midland Quality of Place Working Group and brought forward into the new 501c3 Permian Basin Quality of Place Conservancy. The vision and persistence of these people over the last 3 years who pressed forward even through the pandemic and economic challenges. The Conservancy is thankful for that vision and all the many thousands of hours of hard work. We want to specifically thank Council members Jack Ladd, Scott Dufford, and Mayor Lori Blong for their support of our Hogan Park initiative through to the very end. We have been overwhelmed this week with calls and emails of encouragement from Midlanders all over the community who are saddened and frustrated by this recent decision. Hopefully, the City Council will be able to find a path forward to complete the worthy Hogan Park renovation. We do believe Midland needs it. As for the $28.5 million given or committed to the Quality of Place Conservancy toward Hogan, we have the obligation to view those dollars as belonging to the donors. We have already communicated with each donor to ask them how they would like to direct their dollars for the future. The donors will make that decision individually, and the Conservancy will carry out their directives. Please know that the Permian Basin Quality of Place Conservancy is unwavering in our vision and commitment to bring great projects to the benefit of Midland and the broader Permian Basin region. We will not be moving forward with Hogan Park, unfortunately. Midland is our home, and this community is our priority. We already have line of sight on a new project for this community. Be on the lookout for great things to come from the Quality of Place Conservancy for Midland. Quality of Place Board of Directors: Jeff Beard, Mark Dingler, Chris Ginsbach, Christina Johnson. Hogan Park denial was poor decision. Sharla Hotchkiss, guest columnist. I am proud of the Permian Basin Quality of Place Conservancy, QOP. As a nonprofit consultant, I have assisted in the training and oversight of startup nonprofit groups across our state. Rarely have I seen a group as efficient and dedicated. I'd like to thank the members for the many hours they have spent to create a 501c3 organization, a time-consuming and difficult task. They donated their time and talent. For example, members have expertise in business leadership, law, design, park development, and accounting. They are committed to helping obtain the amenities expected in a city as rich and powerful as Midland that will attract and retain a quality workforce. As a former member of the Midland City Council, 2013 through 2019, I'm aware of the budgetary constraints of our city. Our dollars go to infrastructure, safety, fire and police, and staff, and providing a good water supply. There is little left over after these items are funded. What a win it is to have interested, dedicated, and caring people who are willing to address the quality of life issues that are often neglected because of budgetary constraints. The QOP nonprofit chose Hogan Park as its first project. The cost of $55 million was mind-boggling to me, but was no barrier to these smart and highly committed volunteers. To date, they have raised just more than $28.5 million in funds to completely renovate Hogan, with no doubt that the remaining funds can be attained. This money was raised from individuals, foundations, and businesses who saw the benefit of having a beautiful park with state-of-the-art playing fields and amenities. I attended the council meeting on Tuesday and was astounded when council members Dan Corrales, Robin Poole, John Norman, and Amy Stretcher Burks voted against the project. Their reasons seemed to focus on lack of transparency and maintenance. To my certain knowledge, the council has been well educated by the QOP group over the past 3 years, and the community has seen much coverage of the project particulars in the Reporter Telegram and other local news outlets. The budgeted amount for the park maintenance allowed for inflation and increased costs of maintenance, but could be offset by the money raised in the rental of fields, etc. What? They turned down non-tax dollars that would create a state-of-the-art facility for our children and provide oversight and management of it once built. I think this is the poorest decision made by council in the 50 years I've lived here. The four members who voted no said they could do the same job and wouldn't use tax dollars. I, for one, will be interested in seeing which council member takes leadership and where the funds come from. The immediate discussion was to use the oil and gas funds set aside to benefit all 50-plus parks and green spaces across Midland. As a former council member, I know how difficult it is to budget for our core responsibilities: infrastructure, human resources, facilities, and finances. I look forward to seeing how this group of council members will handle the fundraising and oversight of the park without the use of tax dollars. It is a shame that this project was politicized. It is needed. When the council steps forward to take on the project, I will support you. Just let me know how I can help. I'll be waiting. But remember, I am old. I'd like to see it completed during my lifetime. The Quality of Place Conservancy is already brainstorming new projects to develop. I offer my thanks to the city staff who graciously worked with the Conservancy, along with the following hard-working members of the QOL Board and Fundraising Committee members: Mark Dingler, Jeff Beard, Lori Blong, Christina Johnson, Chris Ginsbach, Jack Ladd Jr., Sarah Harris, Adrian Carrasco, Roy Gear, Jessica Sparkman, Wesley Bounds, and Greg Maybe. Will Midland receive help after Hogan Park vote? Jack Ladd Jr., guest columnist. Last Tuesday was a very happy day for the Ladd family. My wonderful and amazing wife gave birth to my first child, Penelope Pepper Ladd. Both mom and baby are recovering well, and I want to thank everyone for their well wishes and prayers for my family. Unfortunately, I believe last Tuesday was a sad day for Midland. I was not able to attend Tuesday's council meeting for the above reasons, but some of the things I heard said during that meeting give me concern about future projects and prospects for Midland in years to come. Future public-private partnerships. I'm not convinced that Midland can be so picky and choosy to leave $30 million on the table. Midland has many pressing needs over the next few years, which include paying for access to replenishable water, creating a new fire police training center, improving access to State Highway 191, and renovating Wadley and our storm drain systems, to name just a few. All of these projects could benefit from a public-private partnership, just like Pioneer's partnership on our wastewater treatment system, Scarborough Foundation's recruitment of the Texas Tech Health Science Center, or Occidental donating 6 miles of roadway, among many more public-private partnerships to save taxpayers from bearing the cost alone. In light of Tuesday's vote and comments, this city will have an uphill battle convincing private companies and foundations to once again extend a helping hand. Why would private companies and foundations agree to help the city with funding if this is how we treat our volunteers? Midland is a wonderful city, and it has been a blueprint to the rest of the country for how conservative governments can work with private sector philanthropy to provide top-tier projects without having to go into debt or raise hefty taxes. Comments like, "Midland cannot be bought," send the opposite message. Even if you oppose the Hogan Park initiative, we should not attack those people that worked hard to make Midland a better place, even if we philosophically disagree. To insinuate that somehow people like Jeff Beard, Mark Dingler, or Christina Lee somehow had worked countless thankless hours on Hogan and had some purpose other than to improve the city is beyond the pale. Why would anyone want to give to the city in the future with such insulting suggestions being thrown around to good volunteers? One council person went as far as to say that there are better ways to do this, referring to the funding of Hogan Park. And to that I say, I look forward to hearing their plan on how to proceed with providing the same level of amenities going forward. A public-private partnership would not privatize Hogan Park. I heard concerns that the Quality of Place Conservancy would somehow privatize Hogan and therefore limit access to citizens. This simply wasn't true. Yes, there may be times fields are reserved for youth sports practices, like any other park in the city. Plans for Hogan would have also allowed it to host tournaments, bringing in much-needed revenue to the city. Even if you believe the renovations would limit access, the conservative estimates from the Conservancy studies showed that the park would bring in $16 million a year in HOT tax, hotel occupancy taxes, to the city. If you factor in that the city currently pays $1 million a year to upkeep Hogan as is, even with the additional million going to maintenance, that is still a $15 million net to the city that could have gone to improving other parks like Reyes, Mashburn, Washington, and Beale, and finally taking care of gopher holes and goat heads that are the plague to Midland children and parents that use those parks. Not to mention freeing up money in the general fund for police, fire, and roads. Oil and gas revenue. While the oil and gas revenue dedicated to parks right now is very healthy, I think it would be a mistake to assume that money will always be dedicated to parks. Future councils may find it tempting to use said money for more pressing issues. HOT tax from Hogan was a remedy to that issue. It's no secret that Midland's lifeblood is the oil and gas industry, and it has been made abundantly clear by companies in the area that in addition to education and health, quality of life is a real issue for recruitment to the area. Cities like Oklahoma City have already been taking advantage of Tuesday's vote to attempt to entice some of our larger companies to their area. I believe in conservative government and running Midland like a business, and to that end, too, would refer readers to the old adage that you have to spend money to make money, and in the case of Hogan, the majority of the money being spent was not taxpayer money. I would like to close by saying thank you to Diamondback, the Scarborough Foundation, Pioneer, and the countless other companies and volunteers that have dedicated their precious time and treasure to making Midland a better place. Letters to the Editor. Council Majority's financial acumen should concern Midlanders. We need a city council with vision to improve the quality of life for all the residents of Midland. Unfortunately, council members Amy Stretcher-Burks, Dan Corrales, Robin Poole, and John Norman don't have the combined brain bandwidth to accept a $30 million plus gift from Midland's companies and foundations. These council members showed a serious lack of basic economic competency by saying no to that gift, and proposing to use the city's depleting oil and gas revenue instead. The city will also lose out on the motel hotel taxes generated from travelers coming to town for sports tournaments, resulting from better park facilities. While Dan Corrales says this city is not for sale, he voted to give away $30 to $40 million worth of non-taxpayer-funded Hogan Park improvements, which will cost the residents of Midland access to a signature park for all residents, state-of-the-art sports facilities, recreational activities such as splash pads, handicapped accessible playground, dog park, event space for civic groups, future hotel restaurant income. With their no vote, the financial ineptitude exhibited by Amy Stretcher Burks, Dan Corrales, Robin Poole, and John Norman is astounding. The citizens of Midland should be concerned that this is the majority of the city council in charge of our finances. Terry Wilkinson. Letters policy. There is a 350-word limit. Candidate letters have a 200-word limit. Letters must be submitted to estherine@hearstnp.com. Please note the change in address. Deadline is noon Thursdays for the following Sunday. Reported telegram policy limits individuals to one letter in a 30-day period. Letter writers should include phone number and address. Failure to do so could delay letters publication.
Parkinson's and COVID-19. Dear Dr. Roach, 2 weeks after having COVID-19 last April, symptoms of Parkinson's disease began to arise, a slight tremor in one leg and a fluttering in the chest. These symptoms worsened, and in August, I was prescribed levodopa and carbidopa. My symptoms disappeared. The neurologist diagnosed Parkinson's without any other testing. I am a 59-year-old female with no history of ill health and no family history of Parkinson's. I began to read of tremors reported after COVID. Is there a possibility that the tremors are directly related to the virus? Would they subside on their own with time and without progressing as Parkinson's? Answer: COVID-19 is rewriting textbooks. We still have much to learn, but you are correct that a small number of people develop symptoms of Parkinson's and that these symptoms may be short-lived and may not represent actual Parkinson's disease. However, we don't know yet if getting the symptoms after COVID predicts getting Parkinson's disease later on or whether there is an additional risk. Dr. Roach regrets that he is unable to answer individuals' letters, but will incorporate them into columns whenever possible. Readers may email questions to yourgoodhealth@med.cornell.edu.
This is the Dear Abby column. Teenager sports skivvies in front of strangers. Dear Abby, I don't know what to do about my 18-year-old niece. She walks around the house in her underwear. She's been doing it for the last 2 or 3 years. It wouldn't matter, I suppose, if it were just in front of immediate family living there. But she also does it in front of workmen, the cleaning women, answering the door, going out to get the mail, etc. I'm really disgusted. I spoke to my brother, her father, briefly about it. His response was, "She lives here." Is there anything I can do or say to get her to keep herself a little better covered? Signed, Modest in Massachusetts. Dear Modest, yes, there is. If her family doesn't object to her walking around the house in her underwear, that's their prerogative. But someone should remind your niece that doing it in front of workmen, household staff, and the mail carrier is disrespectful to them. How their neighbors feel about it is anyone's guess, but if she's built like Jennifer Lopez or one of the Kardashians, they may be enjoying the view. Dear Abby, my friend is always sending me pics of food and beverages he thinks look appetizing. The problem is, the cut of steak he usually eats is cheap and unhealthy-looking. I try to tell him that better-quality meat often has less fat and cholesterol, but he tunes me out. He drinks a lot of wine, too, and I don't think that's good either. I'm trying to help him because I am concerned about his health. He is 56 and has gained a lot of weight. How can I keep him from a cardiovascular emergency? signed Healthier Eater. Dear Healthier, your friend is an adult. You can't keep him from doing anything. Because he isn't open to your helpful suggestions and the photos make you upset, quit looking at them. Accept that when he makes the decision to change his eating and drinking habits, the motivation has to come from within or from his doctor. You may be able to lead by example and convince him to exercise with you. If you do, be sure to start slowly. Dear Abby, I live in a very small town where everybody knows everything. I own my home and attend a church with a small congregation. When a food pantry opened, I reluctantly began going in to supplement my food budget. The volunteers are all locals, and I know many of them. One woman, who also attends my church, volunteers there as well. This woman has adopted a smirk and a hard stare in my direction when she sees me now. While I work hard at not caring about what people think, this is a tough one. How should I handle her? Signed, Shamed in North Carolina. Dear Shamed, handle it by discussing it with whoever has organized and manages that food bank. Also, mention it to your pastor. If the church member is behaving as you say she is, she should be told to stop embarrassing you, because it is unchristian and uncalled for. You can write to Dear Abby at dearabby.com or P.O. Box 69440, Los Angeles, California, 90069. Her column is distributed by Universal Press Syndicate.
Thank you for joining us for the readings of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.